This is the Farming for a Better Climate podcast.
Hello, my name is David Bell, and I'm one of the consultants with SAC who work within the livestock team. And today I've been joined by Seth Whedon from the Stabiliser Cattle Company and Robert Gilchrist from the Aberdeen Angus Cattle Society. So welcome to you both. Robert, would you like to introduce yourself more fully to the listeners, please?
Yeah, thanks, David. Robert Gilchrist, Chief Executive, Aberdeen Angus Cattle Society. Long background in the industry, mainly come from a consultancy background. And for both of our sins, Seth and I worked together in the past. So when we were both at Keenan. So, yeah, we've been in the beef industry a long time.
Thanks, thanks for inviting us on. My name is Seth Waring. I'm the Business Manager of the Stabiliser Cattle Company. As Rob said, I've spent the last 20 years working along the in the beef, all the way from farm right the way through to fork. And just very briefly on the stabilisers, in case anybody doesn't know anything about the stabilisers, we're a composite breed. We are the labradoodle of the beef cattle world, where we get the best of other genetics and we pull them together to create the most efficient animal. And we do it all breeding by numbers. So anything that is to do with data capture and looking at the best, most efficient animals is where we source from.
No, that's great. Thanks both for that. So the reason we're here today is really to discuss feed efficiency in cattle. So when both of you hear the term feed efficiency, what does that mean to you? So, Robert, what essentially does feed efficiency mean for you?
David, I think the simple fact of the matter is beef production, or most meat production, costs 70% is feed. So feed efficiency is the best use of that resource to get an outcome. You know, you can take it all the way from the cow-calf piece. You know, a cow without a calf is not a very feed-efficient animal, right the way through to full-on testing through feed bins and microbiome-based breeding and all sorts to see where you go from there. So, you know, feed efficiency is a really broad topic, and I think from the fact that you have got me and Seth here, we're going to disappear down so many rabbit holes on it. It's going to be great fun.
Seth, do you see that? Is it in the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the topic itself of feed efficiency is massive, but, you know, just to take it back to its very basics, it's just about how well that animal converts feed into production. And obviously, when we're looking at it from a beef side, it's feed into beef and how that animal can utilize, how the animal can utilize the food better. And really, it's about selecting those animals that are the most feed efficient. So that the total amount of feed needed to get that animal to a slaughter weight is as small as possible.
Yeah. So, why do you think breed societies should be interested in this?
Yeah, that's a good one. Let me jump in on that one. So we've, as a breed, we have been really interested in feed efficiency for a number of years. We got funding through what was then TSB to put feed efficiency testing in cattle. Because we realised, you know, 15 years ago that the when you look at the other meat industries, the pigs, the poultries, and what they've done in that ability for the animal to grow quicker while at the same time eating less feed, it's been massive. And we know it's a hugely untapped potential within the beef world. So we got funding about 13 years ago to put those feed efficiency test bins in. We've been testing feed efficiency now for those last 13 years. And what we found has been amazing. But I think and I'm sure that as we go through this talk, this podcast, we'll have the opportunity to discuss those sort of things. But I think from a breeding point of view, obviously the benefit of breeding is it's cumulative and it's permanent. And if we can have animals that eat less feed but gain at the same or better rates than we've had in the past, from a profitability point, an efficiency point, a use of resource point, a sustainability point, whatever, however you want to look at it, those animals are going to be delivering more.
Yeah, especially with sustainability being quite a major topic in the limelight at the minute.
Maybe just to carry on from that as well, David. I mean, at the end of the day, as breed societies, we are the top of the pinnacle, you know, and everything cascades down from us down into the industry. And we all know that between, as you say, carbon and also financials, we're under pressure from all sides. And So the more that we can cascade more efficient genetics down into the rest of the industry, the more chance we've got of these guys still being there to continue supplying into the marketplace. Because without a customer base, you know, the guys that Seth and I look after as breeders, they haven't got people to sell cattle to. So we need to look at the broader piece there as well and try and, it's trying to make sure that we have people there to take genetics on and continue to produce in the future and continue to do it both sustainably, profitably.
Yeah. So you see that has been one of the benefits of emphasising feed efficiency at this stage is getting producers to think about that cost of producing that animal.
Absolutely. And you know, I think for everybody, when as you know, we've got pressure coming at us from resource use, so that sustainability angle, we've got pressure coming from the financial piece, is that actually if we can have an animal that is more efficient with the resources that they use, so we're getting a really good consistent product on the shelf, but we can do it more sustainably, I think as an whole industry, we're going to be better off. And, you know, for farmers, the reason that we do it and that Breed Society should be looking at it is that every one of those animals is going to be improving. So it's not just a case of selecting that one animal that has the best, but if we continually to breed from those more feed efficient animals, those genetics are going to flow down into the rest of the not only pedigree breeder market, but also the commercial farmers.
Mm-hmm. This is probably being a little bit naive, but do you think producers fully understand what feed efficiency is?
I think producers will give you, well, with every trait and every topic, every producer will give you a different answer. And I think the really difficult thing coming from my previous kind of jobs to looking at something like this is that farmers always see the output because they always get a check in the bank, they always get a mark line, they always get a kill line. But what they don't see from feed efficiency and resource use perspective is they don't see the checks that they don't write. And that's the big problem with feed efficiency is, you know, or maybe that's the great advantage with feed efficiency, is an output over input measure. So you're trying to relate those two pieces together. But yeah, there is that separation between what the industry sees coming into the bank, because they see them all the time because they're getting that hand in their hand. But when you're not writing a check, you don't see it. So it's a very, very different perspective folk have.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the challenge with it is because you have to look at those inputs and the outputs, half of that equation is really easy to measure. The outputs are really easy. Most beef farmers now have cattle crushes, they've got weigh scales, they've got EIDs, they know how to record that and they know how to select for it because you're either getting the cattle away heavier or you're getting them away sooner, you know that the live weight gain on those animals is better. And selecting for live weight gain has been a great tool, and it's made a lot of beef farmers quite profitable in their production systems. However, the point of feed efficiency is that if we just select for those bigger, faster growing animals, we end up with generally bigger cows to produce those bigger, faster growing animals. We end up with more resource usage. We end up with a leaner animal because by selecting for that fast growth, you're generally selecting for a lower fat animal. And so we've managed to do that really well in UK, but because the other half of the equation, that input equation, it's quite a hard one to measure. It's quite a hard one to monitor, and to do it on an individual basis, it costs quite a lot of money to do it. It's you know, we've kind of left it alone, but it doesn't mean that it's no more important, because what we want to do is we want to get that balance right of selecting those animals that grow at the right speed. Not necessarily, we don't necessarily want the fastest growing or the ones with the biggest daily live weight gain, but we want to make sure that those animals are doing it just eating less feed.
Yeah. And maybe the other point on that as well is that there's a collection of farmers out there who operate on the sort of a magic barley principle, in that they've got the combine and they've got the fields and they've got the machinery sitting there. So, you know, the barley's cost them nothing to get in the yard. And there's a bigger piece there as to folk realising just what the cost of production is. You know, and it's a really difficult piece trying to get across that cost of production. And it's so, yeah.
So how do we try and get producers to consider feed efficiency?
I think that's a great... You know, I think individually it's quite hard to understand that that feed efficiency and to select for feed efficiency. Now, that's not to say it's not happening. Obviously, there's a number of breeders out there that are doing their own feed efficiency measures. They're now selling animals and selling bulls with feed efficiency measures associated to them. But I think we need to there's two ways. We need to look at that total cost involved and the benefits around the feeding by breeding for feed efficiency. So the amount of money it's needed to keep those animals, the amount of money and feed needed to get the animals to slaughter. But also, I think the other side of it is that we need to do it as an industry together. And if again, when I refer back to the pigs and poultry industry, when they focused on it for a long time, all of the breeding decisions are coming through. And whether you agree with feed efficiency or not, if you bring it in at the top end and make sure those top end animals are feed efficient, all of the rest of the industry will become more feed efficient because we're breeding from those top end animals.
Yeah. So what sort of percentage of breeders would you say, Seth, are using feed efficiency in the stabiliser world?
Well, we're fortunate because we've been doing our trials for so long, we have got an EBV for every animal in our database on feed efficiency. Obviously, we have to keep doing our feed efficiency testing. And what we've seen is when we first started getting those EBV figures, which was about 8 years ago, there was a lot of interest around them, but not many people made breeding decisions based on them. Now we're seeing a lot more people actually focusing on that because we are seeing these challenges around cost of keeping a cow and the feed needed. So more and more people are now looking at those animals that have a really good feed efficiency, not necessarily from the offspring point of view, which is always a bonus, but from those cows that are going to be on the farm for 10, 12 years. In that lifetime of an animal, you can have a more feed efficient animal, you're going to have a more efficient, profitable, sustainable cow. And so we are seeing, I don't know, it might be as much as 30% inquiring about feed efficiency now.
Yeah. And is that something that you see as well, Robert, that people are starting to inquire more?
Yeah, it's definitely starting to grow. We've got a few breeders starting to measure it on their own units at the moment, and certainly there are folk I know from over time have been importing genetics based on feed efficiency. And you know that we were engaged with the AHDB feed efficiency project a number of years back, and the records are there and starting to grow. And you know, maybe just step back a bit to a previous point you raised, David, is, you know, how do we inform the industry about it? Well, that's maybe why Seth and I are sat here at this moment with you, you know, is to help try and grow that piece. It is an important consideration, and it's only going to become more and more important. There's a two-way process here. You've got the top end where there's that sort of supply lead. But if you can also get a demand pool from guys on the ground actually going out there and saying, I'm not just looking for a bull. I'm looking for a bull that's going to be feed efficient, that I know is going to bake in benefits, not just, as Seth says, to the calf crop, but also to that into the cow herd. And it gives you just that compound long-term gain.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, if people go to the bull sales and they see two identical bulls from the same breeder, one bull can be more feed efficient than the other. And it's actually recognising that fact that in the long run, one bull could actually potentially save you more money and feed costs than the other.
Absolutely. And inversely, if you end up buying a bad feed efficient bull, it can cost you a lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, if you look at the sort of spread between top ranked animals or just, you know, just on the actual intake out of bunks, you know, you can be talking 2-3 times easily a day or per kilo the animals are eating. And it's a significant difference. You know, if I was to offer you two cars that looked the exact same and one of them's going to do 20 miles to the gallon, the one's going to do 60 miles to the gallon, you know, it's not a hard decision to make, is it?
No, definitely not. And that's it. There is such a wide variation within breeds, full stop.
Yeah. And then, from what we've done, so we've now run over 30 tests. And every time we put in 40 animals in a test, between the top animal, the one that eats the performs the best, and the bottom animal, the one that performs the worst, there's always 30% within that. So that's within a breed, within a very tight you know, genetic pool. But imagine that throughout the whole industry, we've got such a big variation, it's actually quite hard to know where to start.
Yeah. So do you think that as an industry, there should be a feed efficient evaluation?
Well, I think I'll dive in before Seth gets here. You know, Seth's there already, and we are treading the path towards it. And other breeds have made the leap, and you know, the dairy sector of the likes are heading that way as well. You know, it's such a no-brainer in terms of information. And I think one of the great things about feed efficiency versus some of the other traits is it's not a single trait selection, because actually it balances a lot of things. To Seth's point, if you relentlessly pursue growth, what you get is something like me, which is a bit big and rangy. Whereas, you know, that's not always what the marketplace is looking for, and also what profitable farming is looking for. So by working through that feed efficiency piece, you get a much more balanced end goal for industry to use.
Yeah, and yeah, look, you know, do I think that we should be doing it as an industry? Absolutely. I think beef as a whole, we need to start working more collaboratively together. And if there was a central location that we could all do our testing, then that'd be great. I understand that it's hard and that the health challenges around it. But yeah, you know, look at all of the other livestock industries. They've all got performance figures. They've got numbers. They make their breeding decisions based on those. And currently, we're missing a big chunk of those. So anything that can be helped to gain those numbers is where we need to go. But I think also as an industry, the way we sell pedigree cattle has had a big factor on that, in the fact that we're competing against our neighbours, we're competing against somebody else down the road to produce our own best version of whatever type of breed of animal we want. And then when we start looking at efficiency measures, the animals that we've been breeding for show ring aren't necessarily the animals that are going to be the most production efficient. They look amazing. There's no getting away from that. But an efficient production animal might be slightly different. And so I know some of the challenges that have happened in the past when the feed efficiency project was up and working is that I know certain breeders weren't keen on putting animals in case their animals perform badly. So it's almost better not knowing and not having any negative impact than putting animals in and trying. Now, obviously, we've worked through that with ourselves, and I know that the feed efficiency, the project that was set up with the Limousins and with the Anguses, it's not far away from having measures coming out of it now. But it's been a long, hard slog, and it's been, I don't know, is it probably been 7, 8, 9, 10 years?
It'll be 9 years anyway, yeah.
I just think, yes, I welcome all central testing or central evaluation, even if we don't want to necessarily test centrally, but a central evaluation that would allow farmers a greater understanding of true efficient production figures.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, the more data we can bring to the party, the more we'll get back from it. You know, it's the same old story. We're looking at some other traits at the moment, and guys say, well, we're only going to get a few records for a start, and say, yeah, but a few records soon grows. And the more you get in, the more it becomes credible. The more credibility you get, the more records you get. And it becomes this cumulative factor. But maybe just to pick up on one of Seth's points around the show ring look. And, you know, I think we also have to recognise within all these factors that we can go for the very, very best of animals on a measure. But if it can't walk, it's not very feed efficient either. So, we've got to make sure that we select for a balanced piece, that an animal that can walk, that's feed efficient, that's going to give you a live calf. I mean, you know, that's always a good starting point, isn't it? The calf's actually on the ground and breathing. There has to be a recognition within all these, with any trait selection, that it does also have to be a functional animal that walks in a straight line and does a good job.
Practically, how would we measure feed efficiency?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways to do that, but the measures that we've got to record, so we obviously have to record how much feed that animal is eating, and we need to be able to do that on an individual basis, and then we need to be able to record how much that animal's putting on. So realistically, when we look at our trials, each one of our trials is around about 2 months long. and that allows you to get individual records of on every animal for that 2 month period. During that time, the animals are weighed every week. All of the feed that is going into it is there's a sample taken and measured for dry matter, so we know exactly how much they're eating, as well as any records around any things that might cause the animal any change around their eating behavior. So things like bad storms can cause an impact, any disease or injury that can also cause an impact. But it takes a long time to get a group of animals, and like I say, we put about 40 animals through our system through 2 months. By the end of that time, we then can look at the data. But once you've got those, the input and the output, you've then got to put them together, and there's a whole heap of different metrics that you can be used to calculate that feed efficiency.
Yeah, and maybe just on that one, Seth, feed efficiency, when you start boiling it down, you've got two separate parts to it. You've got maintenance and growth. So, so some of the measures will actually eliminate the growth factor and look purely at maintenance, because that is the bigger driver. When you look at the what a cow needs per day to energy wise, there is a significant portion of that is just purely to keep the engine on tick over and just keep her standing there chewing and walking and sleeping and all those sorts of pieces. And they're the ones that make the big difference on the feed efficiency front, right, versus the growth factors.
Yeah. So can I ask you a question, Rob? When you're looking at the feed efficiency measures, is there any measures in particular that you look at?
I suppose personally, I would go both on a straight kilograms of dry matter, kilograms of gain, and I would also come back to RFI as well. And just to give you, that kilograms of feed, kilograms of gain is an absolute measure effectively, whereas the RFI then boils it down and extracts that maintenance factor, and it just gives you probably quite a balanced comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. So RFI, residual feed intake.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think without getting too geeky, I think we've just got to be careful because it is such a complicated system and there's all these different measures for it. Generally, selecting for feed efficiency, no matter what the measure, is going to help improve profitability, sustainability, bottom line, all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it's just something that's worth bearing in mind, that if you are selecting purely on that that straight how many kilos of feed is needed to a kilo of gain. If, as with any other trait, continuously select for that, you can end up having an inverse effect, and that actually means leaner, taller animals. But that's where the RFI, residual feed intake, or the NFE, the net feed efficiency, comes into it. It just makes sure that it balances all of those different inputs with the outputs. And again, from a farmer, if a farmer's listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, he's just mentioned six different acronyms, and we're going to look at this measure and that measure. Any of the indexes that are driving efficiency will have the feed efficiency built into it. So generally, look for the indexes that are doing that and make sure that you're selecting those animals, and it will be balanced with everything else that the animal does.
So essentially, it's a lot more than just simple feed conversion ratio. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't want to put people off selecting for feed conversion ratio. That is a great measure, and it definitely goes further than selecting purely on live weight gain. But just be careful. But if it's built into the index will take all of those other challenges around and make sure that the index is balanced.
So, Robert, I think it was you who mentioned that around the globe, the work that's maybe happening in feed efficiency.
I think maybe to pick up on one that Seth kind of alluded to is, like in the US, you've got the Midland Bull Test, where, there's a breeder submit a heap of bulls in and they go through test and then they're auctioned off at the end of it. And the performance information comes out the other side of that. And another one to pick up is just across the water from us in Ireland, the Tully, the whole ICBF piece, where it's one central database and the animals are run through. And it's not even the animals, it's their progeny, so you're actually getting a more industry effect. So I'm not aware of many significant beef-producing nations that are not doing something in this space. It's probably a better way of describing it.
Absolutely. You know, I've been very fortunate in my career to travel around, and I've seen feed efficiency units in Australia, New Zealand, and there's a heap of them in America, all over Europe. And, you know, so obviously the work is going on, but we just need to get everything together to kind of use the data sensibly. You know, it's the same as the creation of any data. You know, you need to make sure you've got a big enough spread across your whole population, and that you're getting enough records in so it's relevant to as many animals as possible. And I think that's the big challenge. Collecting feed efficiency data on its own is great and it can have an impact, but it's when you start working as a population that then it starts having that bigger, more effective impact.
Maybe just to carry on from that, Seth, as well, it's a frustration sometimes because some people look at recording and think, well, I'll record my very best animals and that's all I'll do. And what the realization often is not is that performance recording relies on some very poor animals and some very good animals to actually express the full variation in the population. No, to your point on the feed efficiency, you're seeing a 30% spread still. And if you were just to go and look at the top 10%, then you've got a much, much narrower spread than you would be your 30%. So you actually get a much better reflection of your population with the more information that's gone in. So to gather, the broader the data set that's submitted, the broader and more credible the evaluation at the other side of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it relies on the producers giving you everything, not just being selective.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, that's where the ICBF wins, is that the fact it collects all of the data from all of the producers all over the country, and you know, it allows their evaluation to make a really good prediction on all of those things.
Maybe just as a plug for Harriet along the way here, but you know, there is the National Beef Evaluations that are doing a small subset of slaughter data and using BCMS data at present, but yeah, ICBF, I do look with much envy at the level of data that they can get their hands on. I mean, you know, as we said, you know, Seth and I are probably the geekiest pair of individuals in this field. So it's brilliant to be able to get your hands on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so NHDB are running their national evaluations and starting to progress that further.
And it is using population data as opposed to just a select few.
So if you were to have a crystal ball, say in 10 years' time, do you see feed efficiency being one of the traits that people will be using?
Absolutely. I think the other bit that we've kind of missed along the way in the conversation, but it's not a core to it, but you know, we also have the beauty of genomics coming along the way now, and as Seth pointed out, it's not a cheap thing to record feed efficiency, but if you can record feed efficiency, find the spread of the population and utilize the genomic piece to be able to take out, find the animals with the markers for top and bottom and all points in between, which is the route we're going down. It's going to be a much more cost-effective thing to measure. There's also the likes of microbiome-based breeding, where some are looking now at the microbiome and what's actually the animal's influence on the animal's DNA influence on the DNA of its rumen. And you know, it is vast. There is huge effect of different genetics on the rumen microbiome population within the same production system, within the same shed, within the same family. It's vast. So I think there's a really exciting field starting to develop on that side of things as well, as to where we can get to next. And that's before we even start looking at proteomics and metabolomics and God knows what else will be done by that stage. But maybe to go back to the core question, yeah, I do see feed efficiency being a core measure in 10 years' time. I did warn you it'd be a ramble.
Yeah, look, I would completely echo that. I think if you look at the direction of travel of what's happening in the whole farming agricultural space, we need to be as efficient as possible. We need to use as little resource as possible. And I don't know whether it's going to come from a price intervention or a legislative intervention, but we are, especially on beef animals, we're going to have to become more and more efficient on that. And I think without without upsetting supply chains, so making sure we've still got the same number of animals coming through. The big win for everybody is to use less inputs to get that animal to those slaughter weights. So, you know, it's not about slaughtering them younger. It's not about taking heads out of the system. It's about having more efficient animals on the farm. And absolutely, feed efficiency is going to be one of those key metrics that we're going to have to utilize. And those farmers that are, you know, they're going to make more money. They're going to be more sustainable. The supply chains that utilize that will be more efficient, more sustainable. So, yeah, you know, 10 years time, I think it's almost going to be accepted that everybody is on that journey. I don't know whether people will select individual animals for that. I think farmers will almost expect that those genetics that are coming through will have to be more feed efficient. You know, again, if you look at what the pigs and poultry have done, you know, and the amount of the kilos that they can produce off of 1 kilo of feed now is phenomenal. So I think we've got a long-term goal of good levels of progression going forward. And I think we can do it without upsetting the rest of it, still maintain that quality product when people want to eat on a Friday night, they go out and have a steak. So, yes, it's just going to be a more efficient, high-welfare, high-sustainable product.
Yeah, and you raise quite a good point there. It's not only does the animal have to be feed efficient, but the quality of the meat it's producing has to be acceptable for the consumer.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the one thing to all of this is that food efficiency is going to be a big key part, but it's only part of that puzzle. You know, we can't take our eye off the ball. And as Rob said, you know, we need to make sure that the welfare and sustainability of everything else is right, that the growth rates are there. And feed efficiency is going to be one of those building blocks that we have to utilize, but we can't take our eyes off the rest of the prize.
Yeah. To your previous points, pork and chicken have far better feed efficiencies as ruminant production does. And by the very nature of it, we're never going to reach, you know, 1.6, 1.7 kilos of feed to 1 kilo again. Just the metabolic engine we're running in these animals is a far bigger engine to tick over, you know, just the heat loss through the skin, etc. So we have to recognise the fact that we don't want to be pork and chicken. We don't want to pursue to the nth degree. It still has to be a product with flavour. And, you know, there are those out there that would suggest some of those competing proteins are more of a sauce carrier than an actual eating experience. And what we're all about is putting a product on the shelf that the consumer wants to eat. And feed efficiency removes an element of the perceived climate guilt that might be in there. So there's a real benefit to keeping an eye on that broad piece and making sure that we keep the animal balanced all the way through, but just make it better as we go.
Absolutely. And we do it from the natural resources that cows and cattle have used. So, you know, it's really about forage efficiency, making sure they can utilize that forage. We don't want to turn them into monogastrics where we're putting a lot of concentrates into them. We want to do it as naturally as possible. Let's keep the countryside looking well through the management of cattle on the, you know, up on those areas we can't do anything else with. So yeah, I think that's a real key important factor is making sure that, you know, we call it feed efficiency because it is feed, but really I think it's a forage efficiency.
Yeah, so essentially it's keeping our eye on everything all the way through the experience.
Animal breeding has been full of examples where people have taken their eye off the ball and focused solely on one thing, and the wheels start falling off quite quickly. So yes, feed efficiency just needs to be part of a bigger suite of improvements.
Yeah.
And I think we have to recognise that we're dealing with a natural product. And, you know, I think it's a really interesting factor that, as you say, Seth, you've been selecting for it for a long time, and yet still within the selected population, you're still getting that spread. And we have to recognise it's a natural product. We're always going to have the joy of DNA matching however it wants to match rather as what we'd like it to do.
Yeah, but it's always something that we can strive for, is trying to breed that perfect animal that suits every criteria and ticks every box, but
absolutely.
That's a long way off.
The trouble is, I think the goalposts are always constantly improving and moving and changing. You know, if you go back less than 100 years, it was about how much meat we could produce. You know, now we need to make sure that we are producing that meat, but we're doing it with the right quality and sustainability and everything else. So, you know, we need to make sure that we have the ability to select within our populations whatever is needed from that end product.
Yeah.
I suppose all the way through the conversation, we've been concentrating solely on the producer. But do you see the consumer of the end product having any sort of idea about feed efficiency?
I think we've touched on it a number of times, both of us, with words like sustainability. I mean, it's one that industry isn't always a big fan of, but the consumer wants to think that piece of meat is on the shelf in a fashion that is in agreement with their beliefs. And you know, I did say a short ago there, that it's a phrase that I've heard a number of times is climate guilt. You know, and there's a subset of population that have a guilt around eating meat. So if we can deliver that on the shelf, and feed efficiency is one of the key ways of doing that, because at the end of the day, if you're not doing it feed efficiently, then it's either heat loss or methane loss, but it's resource that's been produced one way or other for no return that's been consumed by the animal and then getting lost. So, yeah, I think consumer acceptance would... Again, it can only be good.
Yeah, I don't think they're looking for it, but I think they expect it. I think the whole point of British beef is that they expect it to be a happy animal walking around outside, eating grass, doing all those good things that cows do, and I think they expect it to be raised in the right way under the right conditions. I also think that they want that sustainability, and we talk about sustainability, and I know it's more than just carbon footprint, but for this example, a lot of people are feeling pressure, and we get told by the media that red meat has got more input resource and more water use and all of these challenges. So I think as an industry, we need to talk about actually how good it is, and the fact that we're on this journey to produce the same quality with a lower level of input and therefore a lower carbon footprint is only going to be beneficial.
Yeah. So if I was to get you to sum up feed efficiency into a few kind of words, what would you describe it as?
Feed efficiency is... How much feed is needed to produce a kilo of live weight gain? That's about mine.
I would skew it slightly myself, just with a slightly different version, but it's basically resource use efficiency. You know, is how can you make the best use of the resource that you have on your farm to get that optimal output to deliver that great eating experience to the consumer on the shelf.
Well, I must say thank you very much to both of you. That has really enlightened me in like what feed efficiency is and where the future lies, essentially. So all that's left to do is say thank you once again and thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having us.
Really enjoyed that.